Welcome to Renegade Thinkers Unite, a show that will help you transform your marketing from mere messaging to programs that break the rules and make a difference. Join the movement today and learn non-traditional techniques that give you an edge. Now, here's your chief marketing renegade, Drew Neiser.
My guest today is Elisa Fink, who is the CMO of Tableau Software. Elisa, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Drew. It's great to be with you.
You had an interesting start in your career, and I always wonder about that first job, if it's as formative for some people as my first job was. So you started your career in ad sales, I mean, at the Wall Street Journal.
That's right.
So was that a now I know what I don't want to do or in my career, or was that really a building block for looking ahead?
You know, in a strange way, both. But I would say the value to me as a marketer was extraordinary. So I would say it was more of a building block. I certainly realized that I worked too hard to be pretty average. So I knew I wasn't really cut out.
Right.
I wasn't really cut out for sales. But what got me excited about my job in sales was understanding the Wall Street Journal's audience, how it compared to our big competitors. You know, what was our strategy and talking to our subscribers, but also to our advertisers. And that's when I realized, like, wow, what really turns me on is marketing and marketing information. But as a marketer, and I often tell people, especially people starting out in their careers, that experience as being a salesperson is an extremely valuable experience, because you really understand one-on-one, the mind of a buyer, how to persuade, how to sell, and how to close. And that helps you as a marketer, but it also helps you in your relationship with salespeople as you market. So I think it was a hugely valuable building block of my career.
Well, you know, they always talk about walking in someone else's shoes, but there is nothing like, and you know, in sales, it's you and you're on the line. And I think a lot of times, you know, and we're not going to spend much time on it, but the age-old conflict between marketing and sales is that they don't understand each other. And I bet you are so much more empathetic and understanding of the salesperson than your average marketer.
Well, I don't know, but I feel like I have great relationships with my salespeople. And I feel like I can tell with people that I work with, marketers in particular, like some things, I hear them say things and I'm like, you clearly don't understand what it's like to be a salesperson,
right,
to have everything at risk on the line for this one account or this several accounts, a number, that's what you're judged by, you know. So I feel like I have a lot of empathy because I have been there. And I think it's extraordinarily valuable just as a marketer to understand, you know, the sales journey all the way to the end, you know, from the start where we create it and make it happen, start it and through the funnel and all the way to the end. Super valuable.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I, at one point in my life, I actually sold encyclopedias door to door. And
Wow. And cool. It
was really, it was a brilliant training, because you basically, they drop you off at an apartment complex and they say, if you knock on 100 doors, you will get a sale. And so
there you go.
And it was, and it was really a remarkable thing. And so it was a lot better way to make a little bit more than minimum wage. One set was minimum wage. Two sets was, you know, hey, wow, that was a good week. And three sets, if you sold three sets of encyclopedia, I was that much closer to the nut I did for college. So it was brilliant. But so anyway, enough about me. Let's get back to you. What I've noticed, and I talk to a lot of CMOs, and you know, look, they don't tend to last that long. And there's a fair amount of movement. You've been at Tableau for 10 years, and nearly half of that as CMO. Can we just talk about the advantages of staying in one place?
Sure. So the advantages are definitely that you get to be deep, and you get to understand things richly, and you get to build relationships with your colleagues, but also with your customers. And you get to see this evolution in what you're trying to accomplish, and you see how things that you've seeded sometimes months ago, but often years ago, are blossoming and making things happen. And you also get to see evolution as it also cycles. Okay, we don't need to do this anymore. We need to change it, or we need to end this. So it's been a really interesting journey. Now, on one hand, it has been a 10-year or nearly 10-year longevity career. But on the other hand, the company has grown so fast over those 10 years. I joined when we were about 40 people. Now we're like over 3,200 people. It's been a different company.
Oh yeah, no, that's over. That's a, wow. That's such huge growth. And yeah. And that's an interesting part of this is, so one of my big focuses is on being an agent of change and what it means to be an agent of change and why that's so important from the marketing department. And I'm curious, you know, on one hand, if you've been at a place a long time, you can sort of settle in and people have sort of expectations and they may, you know, it's hard for them to perceive you as fresh because you've been there. Right, that would be the downside. Whereas, and you know, one of the things I love about being a renegade is I can walk into a company and, you know, it's the definition of an expert. It's right, the out of town guy with a briefcase. You walk in, you haven't been there before, and you say, here's some fresh ideas. And they go, wow, that's really cool. But so it's hard to do that internally, right? And so how do you, as a you know, someone who's been there from almost the beginning, help drive change?
Well, two ways. Number one, I look at change as a fact of life in the sense that in a way I look at change as like, that's a stable thing, that it's going to change, or that I'm going to change, or that we're going to change, or that we need fresh ideas. And so I don't ever feel comfortable with the idea that things, oh, this is how we've always done it, this is how we should keep doing it. I feel like, wait a minute, if we're not changing, we're not, there's something not quite right about that. So I think I have an open mind about change, that hey, change is a good thing. And in fact, I often tell that to people, like, if you can accept that change is the way things are, then you can be at peace with it and you can roll with it and you can recognize this is good change. Let's do this change or let's try this. So I think that's an important element about, even though I've been there a lot, I've really, a long time, I'm very open to like change is a good thing. I think the other way the other important thing is to recognize that as an internal person or a person who's been there a long time, you do have some strengths in terms of like, you know, the brand, you know, the relationships, you've got all that stuff, but you also have to recognize, hey, I may not be the freshest source of ideas. And so as a leader and as an agent of change and as a long-term employee, there are times that I just need to listen and I need to keep my mouth shut and I need to be open to maybe this sounded crazy 3 years ago, but now it's exactly what we need, or maybe I don't get it. Or, you know, so you just have to have an awareness that as an employee who's been there for a longer time, you just sometimes have to just have a natural, and maybe unnatural resistance to just shutting down new ideas or shutting down. We've tried that before. I'm thinking that there's a red flag that goes off when I think, oh no, we've tried that before. Wait a minute, this might be a blind spot. Let's hear it out again. Yeah. And then that way you really give your new people and the fresh ideas an opportunity to prosper and an opportunity to be applied to the situation you're in now, given that the change thing is constantly happening. So I think you just have to be very conscious about the bias,
right?
We've tried that before. So, yeah, be an agent of change. Yeah.
Good for you for recognizing that. I recently listened to a great course on creativity, and one of the big blocks is, well, we've tried that, right? And that's just natural reaction. And you know, I face that too as a, you know, I run a company and you know, I've got a lot of young millennials, and they might make a suggestion and, you know, well, I've been doing this for, you know, a long time. You've only been doing it for a week. How could you do it? But it's really, you know, one, out of the mouths of babes, but two, just as you said, shut your mouth, open your ears and hear these ideas and then take advantage of all the information and data and sources that you have to say, okay, how do I build on that? What's the plus one or plus two that could make it come to fruition? So
And I find too, like, you know, in those cases, I find too, as you're listening, rather than judging, I and bringing up all the things why you think it won't work, is to turn those why it won't work into questions. Like, have you thought about why, you know, have you thought about this? This is very difficult because of these reasons. Have you thought about how we could solve that? Have you thought about this? Have we considered this? So rather than just shutting it down and making people feel like, you know, you're actually engaging in a conversation, like, I'm interested in your ideas and here's some areas that I'd love some more thinking about it. And maybe this is, well, that might make it not possible. Sure. But it also means you might get even great ideas to solve the problems that you always thought were the problems with that idea in the first place because you tried it before, you know. So I also am a big believer in almost like not a Socratic method, but a very question-oriented method of like, how do we get the best out of this?
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, when you talk to entrepreneurs, and if you, oftentimes they'll say to you, I had a blind spot about this thing, and I made sure that nobody asked me the questions that would have been so, why this shouldn't work. And it's so the entrepreneur has this sort of blind faith that it is going to, and there's, it's funny, and it's why not every entrepreneur is the 4.0 800 you know test scores, because you know those people can see all the reasons why something won't work, and the entrepreneur often doesn't see them, and to their benefit, right? They're just too stupid to see them. You should have known that wasn't going to work.
It's an
interesting thing, and you're right to remind yourself, and I bet it gets harder. But let's I love this question, because I know what the superpower I would love to have. I'm curious, what if you had a superpower, what is it?
That's a great question. You know, I think there's one thing that I just used to resist about myself, and now I just embrace, and that is I'm an incredibly enthusiastic person. So I think I've realized over the years that enthusiasm goes a long way toward doing the right thing and getting things done, because it produces energy. And I think I bring a lot of energy to a team or to a meeting, and I tend to be enthusiastic and positive, like, let's do it, we can do it. And I think that's just something that it's, you know, not a superpower, but it's just something, okay, my personality can help propel a team forward or an initiative forward by being a positive, upbeat, let's do it, look at the opportunity we've got, this is going to be great, a kind of attitude. And I think at times it's infectious, and I think it helps propel people forward. Sometimes it's a superpower, you know, too much of a good thing, as you know, can be a bad thing. So sometimes I know it turns into a bad thing, but overall I think I'm just like, okay, I am an enthusiastic person. I have a lot of energy towards ideas and getting stuff done and doing great stuff. I'm going to embrace that. And when I get slowed down and stopped by it, I accept that too.
You know, it's so funny. I love that. And one, a couple of things come to mind is, one is embrace your freak, and two, there, you know, superpowers, the fact that you could change the mood in a room by bringing your enthusiasm to it. And I have often been accused of that, and which I, you know, I embrace, because frankly, I'd rather be around an enthusiastic person than a non-enthusiastic person. You know, that life's too short. Yeah. And I have several CMOs for you to talk to who share that position.
I think people want to get stuff done. I mean, that's what business is about, right? We're trying to achieve results for our companies, for our customers. And if you're not thinking you could do this and it's worth doing, and so let's go all in, then, so sure, you need careful analytics and careful business judgment and careful thought about why and who and when. But you can't, you know, once you're in, let's go in and create energy and enthusiasm, right? And use our resources to 100% of their effectiveness being forward thinking about it.
Well, I totally agree. And of course, and we just don't need any Eeyores around here as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
You know, keep the Eeyores in the corrals. So we're going to take a quick break. And then, and when I come back, we're going to focus in on what the kinds of things that Elisa has done at Tableau and dig into that. So we'll be right back.
Renegade Thinkers Unite is brought to you by Social Media Explorer, the website that explores the world of social media from the inside out. Great advice from today's leading social media columnists and experts at socialmediaexplorer.com. That's socialmediaexplorer.com.
All right, we're back. My guest is Elisa Fink, who is the CMO of Tableau, and we've had just a great conversation about leadership and how to sort of bring your personal enthusiasm to the job. Let's talk a little bit about Tableau. First of all, I'm certainly aware of it. I sort of think about you guys as a leader in data visualization and making data user-friendly. And I'm wondering if that perception is even valid, if that's it's a decent one to start with.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely. I mean, I think we really, our mission is to help people see and understand data. And I remember on my very first phone call with our co-founder and CEO at our time, at the time, who was my boss for about 9 years, Christian Chabot. That was the mission he cited, and it drives everything we do. So certainly we're all about user-friendly data analytics. I think the thing that has evolved, particularly visual analytics, I think the thing that has evolved is that we've become a company that can serve that up at scale, that we can help enterprises and large organizations and massive groups of people use data to the level and to the extent that they want to, whether that's a deep data scientist or all the way to a frontline person who needs to check a dashboard to find out how things are going on the factory floor and maybe make an adjustment to speed on some machine or something. So I think the thing that isn't a correct perception, and I think that we are about the people using data and helping them use it to complete the tasks and the objectives and the strategies that they want to. We can help people do that safely, securely, and at scale.
Well, there's certainly no doubt that there's more data and companies are trying to get their hands on it.
Goodness.
So it's got to be a great market to be in. Now, one of the things that is really interesting about the chief marketing officer role is that it has evolved. I mean, it's always been a challenging role because you had so many dependencies. If customer service is no good, then you can get the customer in, but you'll lose them on the other end and you have a retention problem. You can have issues in new product development where you're dependent on something and the product isn't there and the marketing team is sort of selling smoke or vaporware. So I'm curious, and so the response to that in many ways has been to add things to the CMO's job beyond marketing. I'm curious, what is your domain as far as your job goes, and has it evolved a little bit over the last couple of years?
That's a great question. I mean, at Tableau, marketing is all about the prospect and the customer and working hand in glove with sales to grow the community of Tableau users, the people who can use data, and to keep those people engaged with Tableau in their journeys in using data. So that stretches from product marketing and product, not so much product strategy, but working hand in glove with our product strategy team on our development side. But what are the messages? To the analyst relations, the public relations, our overall messaging and communication. Demand generation is a huge part of our business because we did start out as a tool that people bought individually. It was almost like a consumer product. So demand generation has always been very important. That's how we kind of disrupted the market, all the way to the website and the interactions that are going to be on the website to solutions marketing. I mean, we have a pretty vast coverage, but we have a lot of great partnerships with our product development team, with our sales team, with our operations team, with HR, with finance. I mean, we're a very collaborative organization. So there are some things that I don't own that another marketing CMO might own. Pricing. I don't own pricing. We contribute pretty heavily to those discussions. I support partner marketing. Marketing is in my group, but most of partner and channel sales and activity there are in other groups. So there's a lot of collaboration that happens at Tableau.
Interesting. And it's an empire, but it's not an evil empire. So let's talk about your success. What's your, when you sort of point to your, this is my career defining moment, my proudest accomplishment so far at Tableau.
Well, you know, I am so lucky, Drew. I have had almost 10 years of just an amazing journey. I mean, every year has been fun and interesting, and we've accomplished so much, and we've been challenged by so much. I mean, I guess I would say taking a company from sub $5 million in revenue to a run rate of $1 billion is it's awesome to me. I feel excited by what we did there. We went public. I got to stand on the balcony at the New York Stock Exchange when we opened the market. I mean, that's such a memorable moment.
Wow.
But it's also all the little things that we do with customers. Like we just held our customer conference in Austin, Texas. We had 13,000 customers in Austin for 4 days. What a great thing it was to be able to interact with them. Some of them have been at all of our conferences. Some of them, they were first-time attendees. It's so gratifying to see how what you do can touch people and can make them like you change, you know, they'll be like, my job is so much better. I love my job now because of Tableau, or I'm so engaged with this community, or you've changed my life. I used to be stuck in, you know, a hidden analyst job, and now I'm actually out there working and promoting the use of data with people. You know, it's just so many moments. And overall, I would say, I just feel so fortunate to have had Tableau in my career, and my boss, my old boss, our CEO, would say, you know, you were just the right person that came along at the right time for the right job. So it rarely happens, and believe me, I am so appreciative of the magic that I have had visited upon me in my Tableau career. So it's just been a great journey.
So let's, as we narrow it, I mean, one of my goals here is to make sure that there's some key takeaways that mm-hmm. Other marketers can learn from. As you sort of, if we take a program, I would love to talk about the customer conference. I think that's a really interesting thing. 13,000, that's a huge event. What were some of the challenges that you faced in pulling off an event like that? And what were some of the secrets that you brought to help make that a success?
Sure. And I think it is actually, our conference is a good sort of analogy in a way, or metaphor for all of our marketing. Because when we started that conference, this was our 9th year or 10th year, I forget. I was a big proponent. We need to do this. We have an engaged community. We need to serve this community. People are like, really? This is a little early. But I thought we'd get 100 people. We ended up with about 200. And the thing has just grown. So it's grown at scale. Every year, we've increased the number of people. It's new capabilities. And I think, like I said, as an analogy or as a metaphor, as a representation of our marketing, the thing that I've learned is like, look, just get started. You have a great idea. Just, you know, you don't have to start out with everything solved or every part of it all the way to bright. If you're better off just sort of getting into the market, trying it, experimenting, piloting, learning, trying again, piloting again, keep upgrading it. So we didn't start out doing a 13,000 person event. We started out with a 200 person event, right? And I remember saying to our director of conferences at the time, who's still with the Tableau, we still work together, Amy, we're going to look back at this conference. We were so happy. Everyone was so delighted with the outcomes at the company. But I said, Amy, we're going to look back at this conference in several years, and we're going to say, oh my God, that was such an amateur event. Can you believe we did X? Oh, but we love it now. But we are going to learn so much. And I think, again, I think people, that's one thing I just encourage people to be like, look, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have it all the way to bright. You have to start getting in there and in scope, try things and get them done and get them done well and learn. So yeah, this year, 13,000 people was amazing. Guess what? We've got another conference coming up in October this coming year in Las Vegas for another huge number of people. We've got plans for improvement, things we could change, things we could make better. You know, it's just a constant evolution. And I think as a marketer, you've got to have a learning mindset, be a learner. No matter what your scale, what your age is, or what level you're at, being a learner is the way to approach marketing, because the world is changing. The world changes fast. Markets change fast. Be a learner, because that's going to serve you well.
I'm so with you. I'm constantly absorbing different sources, and it's amazing that sometimes something completely off track can inspire you.
Renegade Thinkers Unite is brought to you by Social Media Explorer, the website that explores the world of social media from the inside out. Great advice from today's leading social media columnists and experts at socialmediaexplorer.com. That's socialmediaexplorer.com.
I'm quite curious, in your LinkedIn profile, you describe yourself as an analytics-oriented person, so obviously you're at a perfect company for you. So what analytics using, and I imagine you drink your own champagne and probably use Tableau,
oh my gosh,
market Tableau, which we could talk about, but what, when you talk about the experience that you're providing for your customers, how do you measure the success of, other than attendance, the success of an event like that?
Oh, sure. Great question. I mean, it matters a great deal to us that the investment we make, not just of money, but time and resources for a conference, is worth it to our customers and worth it to our business. So we measure in a lot of different ways. So of course we measure attendees and return, people returning to the conference. Of course we measure that, or what kind of customers are coming. We look at, of course we survey. We do a broad survey about the entire conference. We do surveys about every session and every speaker. Of course, we do that. We use, on our badges, we track with RFID chips. We want to know where people went. We want to analyze where they spent their time, how much time they spent at it. We survey our employees. We survey our speakers. We do a lot of data collection around the conference. We try to do as much data collection that is actual behavior collection, like the RFID chips, or looking at our website, or looking at how they use the app. And looking at where they showed up, for which sessions were packed and which were less packed, because that, you know, behavior is ultimately the highest expression of people, of their intent and their satisfaction. But we measure, we look for all kinds of data to support whatever kinds of questions we're going to have. In fact, in the next 3 days, I think in 3 days, I've got a pretty large executive level review on the value of TC16, what went well, what didn't go so well, what did people like, what are we going to improve, what are we going to sunset, what are we going to bring on to make the experience even better next year, and it's all going to be backed by data. Now, I want to say we also care about the qualitative data, so we do a lot of interviewing as well. We do a lot of just gut checks. And we do a lot of soft interviewing with attendees and people who maybe didn't attend and people who previously attended, to really round out that picture of what's happening or what has happened, so we can make it better. And we are pretty analytics. We've got a lot of data, and we love the data, and we use it for as much as we can. Sometimes it doesn't tell the full story, but that's what marketer judgment and marketer experience really matters. It's really the science and the art of marketing, and the data science of marketing is exciting and it's become more dominant, but there's still an element that is use your judgment, be a great marketer, and the more data and the more experiences you have, the better the marketer you are.
And I, you know, that so fits in. You just teed me up there, because I have my four characteristics of a CMO: courage, artfulness, thoughtfulness, and scientific. And the balance of the art and the science is so critical. Now, one of the things that I think everybody with data, as you described it, you talked about so many different possible measures, it becomes very difficult to know which one is more important. Do you have an overall score where you look at sort of one big number, you know, the way, say, some brands are using NPS, or if you were doing an employee engagement study, you'd measure the sort of the absolute engagement number, which is sort of an aggregate of some other measures. Do you have sort of one? Because, I mean, that isn't the biggest issue with big data is I got so much of it, but finding the, you know, the ones that really matter and being able to get those all the way up to the top in what you would call a dashboard. How do you do that for your own events?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, we do certainly look at things, certain factors we consider higher. So how our customers overall rate the conference, and how the overall ratings of certain sessions matters to us, the content matters to us, because we consider the content of our conference to be king. Content is king, and so we really want to know, did the content hit the mark? So those metrics about content and overall satisfaction really matter quite a bit. We also, as a business, look at another metric is, like, do these customers who come, do they engage in Tableau more deeply? Do they buy more software? Do we see more usage? So we want to know that at a macro level, the conference is returning value to the business. Of course, we want it to return value to our community, and that in turn should return value to the business, but we do measure it all the way to the value to the business. I'm a big fan of, like, look, the beauty of what we do with visual analytics, data visualization, not tables and reports, is that you can look at a lot of data and you can see, wow, look at the difference between how people liked our keynotes versus how they liked our hands-on training, or what they thought about the food, or what they thought about this. Overall, the more data you can look at, literally visually encompass, the more your brain is consciously or even subconsciously processing an informed opinion about the value of the marketing program, in this case, our conference. So I'm a big fan of, like, I like to wallow in the data and the different cuts and the different things, because overall, I trust my brain to be absorbing look at these patterns. Look, I'm seeing a consistent pattern. People loved this. People didn't love that so much across a lot of factors. And then I can really speak in a deep way about the big trends. So I'm a big fan of, don't restrict yourself to two or three measures only. Take a look as a CMO, as much analysis that your team is working on as you can stomach, because I think overall your brain absorbs it and you form a better informed opinion about the value of what you're doing. And so I love to look at what's going on across our programs. I really do. I feel smarter. And then, therefore, when you feel smart, you feel confident. I feel like when I walk in to defend my budget and say, this is what we need in 2017, and here are the strategic priorities, and here's how we're investing in every one of these strategic priorities with not only program spend, but headcount, I'm confident. I feel confident about that. Am I right all the time? No. But I feel confident.
But, you know, and sometimes just feeling confidence can carry the day, right? As we all know. Yeah. You know, there's one thing that you said that I think is so important. This is a general thing for people who make software and, frankly, any product. It's so interesting because a lot of companies put all their effort into getting the product into the person's hands, sell it, right, and then use it. And what's interesting, whether it's an app or a very sophisticated product like yours, you know, oftentimes people only use 1/10 or 1/20 of the capability of the product. And the result of it is they're not as loyal because, well, I don't use it all. And it's funny, I'm guilty of that on a particular platform that we didn't like. Well, the truth was we weren't using it to its fullest extent. Okay, that's one point, but we're going to keep moving because we have to wrap up soon. So as you look at 2017 and you were sort of talking to a group of marketers, what's on your sort of one and two do lists? And is there anything that is on your don't list for 2017?
Oh, that's a great question. On the do list is to continue to advance and interrogate the opportunities in the digital world, whether that's your platform, your technical marketing platform of all the different kinds of tools you have internally and how they work together and the data streams that you're capturing from all those things and how you can integrate them to give you a fuller picture of your customer and your prospects on one hand. And then the other hand is the opportunity to reach people and have them create visibility and brand awareness amongst them and then engagement in terms of what the different ad platforms and social platforms and all the different kinds of ways you can now reach people digitally is mind-blowing. And even in the last couple of years, or, you know, 5 years, I mean, it's changed dramatically. I mean, you know, it's not even in the same breath. You could always imagine the possibilities, but now the possibilities have come home to roost and they're real and actual things you can do that you always sort of dreamed you could do. So my do list is definitely like interrogate and investigate and leverage the heck out of marketing platforms internally for how we execute and how we do our work and externally and how we reach our customers and prospects. Those are two of, you know, both of those things are my two big to-dos.
That's a great list. And Lisa, I want to thank you for being here. But before we wrap up, I wanted to sort of summarize a couple of things that I learned that I thought were so important. First, as an internal, and I think this is true for whether you're a CMO or anybody who aspires to a leadership position in the company, you know, the notion of empathy for all the roles of the folks that you interact with and sort of getting rid of any sense that your job or your superior. And anyway, go deep. And that was such a resonant thing to me because so many times the marketers tend to be generalists and the advantage of having deep knowledge. Embracing change is easier said than done, but you get there by listening. You get there by listening to different points of view, perhaps someone who's from the outside, maybe even a renegade thinker. Lastly, the need for focus and to be a continual learner. So those were sort of great thoughts for the individual. And then from a a marketer-specific standpoint, the fact that we spent the whole time talking about a conference is really about staying close to your customer and how critical that is. It also, to me, is emblematic of the desire to serve the customer, where marketing becomes a service, and I talk about that quite a bit. I'm going to summarize the last thing I'm going to say. The most profound and fun part of this conversation is data equals confidence. And if you have the data, you're going to carry the day. And so with that, I think we can wrap up our show today. And Elisa, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
This has been Renegade Thinkers Unite, but it doesn't end there. Just go to RenegadeThinkersUnite.com for more and subscribe to the show. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We'll talk with you next time on Renegade Thinkers Unite.